Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, focused on applying Mazda's customer-centric approach for vehicle design to car buying and servicing in order to create an experience centered around the customer. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com. This is Charlotte Talks. I'm Mike Collins. Today we get to have some fun. Well, at least I know I will, because we're going to spend this hour with a man who has graced this city's airwaves for nearly 50 years, first on radio, then on television, constantly reinventing himself to stay relevant, and in the process became the man I refer to as the hardest working man I have ever met in broadcasting. And of course, I'm talking about Larry Sprinkle, who recently celebrated 40 years at WCNC-TV, and who has been rising at ungodly hours for much of that time to do weather forecasts on the station's morning news programs. But that just scratches the surface of what Larry Sprinkle has meant to TV viewers and radio listeners over the years, and of the work he has done both on and off the air, which has made him a fixture in media here. Recently, he shifted roles, but continues to get up early and continues to contribute to the fabric of the city. So I just wanted to talk to him. And he said yes, probably because he found an open hour in his always filled schedule. And so he's here. Larry, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Mike. It's great to be here with someone who I have great admiration for. He's a great friend for so many years. And we have so many stories, mutual stories about the business of radio and just the business of broadcasting. So, I mean, for me to come in here, I'm here every day if you need me. So,
okay.
You can it's great to be here. And thanks for those opening remarks. I was listening going, who is he talking about?
We've just done the whole show off the air. We've been sitting here for 30 minutes talking about stuff. But my producer, Chris Jones, tells me, and I'd never heard of this term before, that you possess what he calls an aptronym. Do you know what that is?
I have no idea.
I didn't
say that one more time. I have a what?
Aptronym.
I got a prescription for that a couple weeks ago. It's a condition that is I've had since childhood.
Right.
No, I have no idea. What is it?
That's the name for that suits the owner of it because it's apt in terms of what they do for a living. In fact, that was noticed.
Like Dr. Payne.
Yes. That was noticed by Jimmy Fallon.
Okay.
And a member of the NBC Tonight Show band a couple of years ago. They were talking about how the names of people fit their companies. For instance, Doug Bowser was the president of Nintendo, whose iconic villain in the Mario game franchise is named Bowser.
That's like if there was a chef named, like, Tom Kitchen.
Hi, guys. It's Tom Kitchen here in my restaurant, The Kitchen in Edinburgh.
What? That's like if there was a weatherman named, like, Larry Sprinkle.
Every day you rely on Larry Sprinkle for your forecast as you head out the door.
That was on Fallon, yeah.
Now, I'm sure that people have asked you this a gazillion times. I'm going to ask you for all the listeners who've never gotten an answer.
You know,
is that really your name?
I go to a lot of schools, have been for many years, and I always tell the story because kids want to know, well, you know, when did you get interested in the business you're in and how long ago was it? So I'll tell them the story. We lived up in Winston-Salem, North Carolina, from the time I was 6 to 12 years old. And it was really around 6 years old that I got fascinated with two things in broadcasting. I loved weather. I loved storms, the excitement of thunderstorms and the occasional hurricane. And then I loved radio. I loved to listen to radio. I had a little transistor radio. So I was fascinated with the DJs that played the music. And then those who did weather on TV and up in Winston-Salem, it was the Shell weatherman. Had a little set that looked like a forest ranger station that he climbed a tower to get there with all the gauges and everything. So I was fascinated with that, and I had a chance to go down to WSJS as was known then, WXII now, and actually meet him. Mm-hmm. So we're standing in the studio, and here I was at that time 10 years old, and he looked at me and he said, "So I noticed that you're really fascinated with all this." I said, "Yes, I watch you every day at 6 o'clock." And he says, "You like to do this?" And I said, "This is, yes, I would love to do this." And he goes, "What?" Now he says, "How old are you?" And I went, "I'm 10. And he goes, "What is your name?" And I tell everybody, "Okay, now listen to this. I'm 10 years old. I said, my name's Larry Sprinkle." And So I said, would a 10-year-old kid change his name? Maybe, maybe not. But no, that's, you know, Al Roker said it to me. And this, he said this, this was when he and I were doing a live shot several years ago. We're talking. He was down here on he has these missions where he travels all over the country to raise funds for nonprofits. And we're on the air, and he goes, you know what, I've always wondered about you. He said, you know what, Larry, you had two choices in life. Your choice could be urologist or meteorologist. You made the right choice. Said, thank you, Al. Thank you, Al Roker. So, I'm confirmed.
So you and I have a similar experience, because when I was 5 or 6, my parents tell me that I would put on earmuffs and carry around the vacuum cleaner cord, which was my microphone.
That's great.
Pretending that I was Arthur Godfrey, because he wore headphones on television.
Yes,
because he was
he
on the radio.
Did.
At the same
yes,
time.
He did.
Yeah.
You know what's fascinating about that, Mike?
Yeah.
I thought I was the only person who remembered Arthur Godfrey on television with headphones, and that he was also a great influence on me as well.
Uh-huh.
I was fascinated with that. And he did. You can see the pictures of him. He's on television. You go, why is he wearing headphones? But that was his style. That's what he did those days. Yeah.
So TV weather, when did you actually start doing it?
I started in, I left radio in, I think it was March of 85, and came to the station. Initially, I actually left radio. I left the station, left Assistant Stan Kaplan and the whole organization, and really did not have a job. I was just really kind of burnt out on the whole situation. I've been doing it for so many years,
right.
And getting up at 5 to go on at 6. Later on, I'd get up at 1:15 in the morning. And so I left without a job, although I had been doing a lot of freelance work. At that time, we had different call letters. We were I started working at the station. It was WRET when Ted Turner owned it. Then it was WPCQ, then CNC. And so they knew that I was leaving, and they said, we have a opening here for something that you may enjoy doing. It's kind of the staff announcer for television. You'll host weekend movie matinees, and then we have they're called cut-ins every day on the Today Show, just a couple minutes. So that's how it started in the mid '80s. Basically, anything on air I was doing.
Well, let's go back.
Okay.
This is your life, Larry. That's an old show.
Let's take it back in time. Yeah.
Because I quoted in the opening minute that we were talking over, we didn't hear what they play at the top of the hour here, because that's pre-recorded, and we were sitting here chewing the fat. But in that opening minute, I quoted Ted Baxter, the fictional anchor on the
Tyler
Moore.
Yes, Ted Baxter, the announcer, yes.
It all started at a 5,000-watt radio station. Where did it start for you? What was your first paid job?
First paid job, I was 14, and it was, we lived at the... 14. You know, people hear 14, they think he must have been a prodigy. I was
the
opposite.
Were there child labor laws?
Oh, man. There weren't, because I worked literally at that station probably 6 months with zero pay. It was like... And literally was coming to this... I met the manager of WBBO in Forest City, North Carolina. We lived there a couple years, and I went to school there. I bounced all over when I was growing up. And... he said, "Well, I tell you what, you just come to the come to the station every day after school. You're too young to go on the air, and you can just hang out." For 6 months, I was there. My mother drove me to the radio station, dropped me off. I would watch the guys on the air and literally take out the trash. Back in those days, empty the ashtrays. There's a lot of that going on back in those days. And so at some point, the guy said, "Well, if you're going to be here every day, we're just going to give you a show." So they gave me a show. After school every day, a two-hour show on the radio.
Playing. They pay you for that?
Yeah, they did.
Okay.
At that point, they started paying me. But I had my own show on WBBO, playing, taking requests and playing music.
What did they pay you?
I was paid. This is way back in time. It was like a dollar 25 an hour, something like that. I mean, that was the day.
I think the first job I had, I made $3.50 an hour. Or something like
well,
that.
Well, you know, we know that you started out in Washington, D.C.
No, I started out in La Plata, Maryland.
Okay, well, well, that's about like...
Which
you know,
is far like Camden to Charlotte.
Yes, yeah. Forest City, a great town in Rutherford County, small town, and I was not, I was 14 and not very good. Not very good.
Well, why would you be? Well, that's how you get good.
Well, that's exactly right. But the guy, they had a series of younger guys before me that had the job. And the guy before me, his name was Steve Norris. And Steve Norris left a tape, and he sounded like this. WBBO in Forest City, Steve Norris at 20 minutes after 5 with the Beatles. I'm Steve Norris. He was 16 years old.
Oh, wow.
And so I was like this. Hey, everybody. It's the Spring of WBBO Radio. Hit the Beatles. That was me.
So was I. And I don't understand.
Not how, that bad.
I don't know what was. After I heard myself on tape for the first time in college radio, I thought, what? Even I thought, why do you think you have a future in this?
Same thing. It was not. There was. It was not. There's so many people who start out in the business of radio that have that natural ability.
Yes. Yes.
Not me, probably. We were one and the same.
And back then, if you didn't have a big booming voice, you didn't have a future.
No, you didn't. Yeah, it was really all didn't. Big bass baritone.
I read yesterday that you spent time doing a radio show, a top 40 American music radio show in Addis Ababa.
Ethiopia, yeah.
When was that?
When I grew up, my dad was a civil engineer, and his job was all projects. 2 years here, 3 years here. So when I was growing up, we moved all over the United States and then all over the world. And one of those spots was Addis Ababa, Ethiopia. So I was in high school in Forest City at East Rutherford High School and working in radio. And my dad said, we're going to move. Next move, we're going to Africa, East Africa. And I went, no, I'm going to stay here. I have my grandparents, they can stay. He said, no, you're going with us. I said, no, I've got a... I said, I'm a DJ. And he looked at me. The look he gave me, it still brings fear to my soul. He said, you will one day have a real job.
That's right.
That's what he's. And so I ended up, yes, with the family. And I called Radio Ethiopia and spoke to their program director. I said, my name's Larry Sprinkle. I'm here in Addis Ababa. I'm going to high school. I'm a radio announcer and just want to know if you have any openings. The guy says, well, thank you for your call, but we have an English language department, and we do have our employees who speak English, so we don't really need anyone. Hmm. 1 month later, I get a phone call from that guy. We have an emergency. One of our announcers is very ill, critically ill. Could you come in? And that began it. So I started. I had a radio show playing music sent to me on reel-to-reel tape by my friends here in the United States. So we had all the current music, played all the big hits on Radio Ethiopia, which was, they had two 100,000-watt AM transmitters. So imagine a signal on 100,000-watt AM. It blasted all over East Africa and the Middle East. So I had listeners, really international listeners on that show. So it was pretty amazing.
So Charlotte was a step down.
It was a big step down. Here I am blasting out to the world, and I go from that to Charlotte. No, it was quite an experience.
I have to take a break in 30 seconds, I want to ask you this. When did you first arrive in Charlotte, and was it to be on Big Ways?
I came in 1972, and no, well, it's a long story.
It's convoluted.
It's a convoluted story, but I came to WRPL, actually. Okay. That was the first station, really the second station.
We'll get the long story. Okay. We have to take a break. We'll get the long story, and we're going to do a little walking down memory lane with Larry Sprinkle, our guest today.
Thank you.
On Charlotte Talks on WFAE.
Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, using Mazda's customer-centric approach to cars to create a car buying and servicing experience where the customer is the center of their business. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com. It's Charlotte Talks on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE and WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. Larry Sprinkle is our guest. He's been on the radio and television for about 50 years.
some years in Charlotte.
Yeah.
40 of those years at WCNC-TV, although it's changed call letters over time because he's the only person that remains constant there. And I just wanted to talk to you because you're celebrating a milestone.
Thank you.
Came here in about 1972, but it wasn't to be on Big Ways. It was to be on another station. Mm-hmm. When did it start? Big Ways, people who don't remember, who weren't here, Big Ways was a big deal.
Yeah.
Since I used to work at the other competition. Place,
yes.
people should know that the first radio station in the Southeast was WBT.
Mm-hmm.
It had been on the air since 1922.
Yeah,
and because when you're first and you're the only thing going for a long time, you tend to remain that number one position for a very long time until this little upstart comes along, this Big Ways thing. Comes along, and believe me, you guys were a topic of conversation long after Big Ways had come and gone, because the shockwaves of your eclipsing that station lingered for a very long time.
This is interesting. This is the 60th anniversary mm-hmm. of WAYS, 1965, that Sis and Stan Kaplan came to Charlotte and bought this 5,000-watt AM, 1,000-watt night top 40 station, and changed radio in Charlotte, changed radio really in the Southeast. I mean, they came in, and they were serious. I mean, they did promotions. They gave away money. They had people digging up people's backyards looking for the great treasure hunt. They hid something in spots across Charlotte and would give clues, and they ended up digging up people's backyards. So that was stopped by the law enforcement for doing that.
This is back when radio was fun.
It was wild days, yeah. And the promotions were amazing. They brought in a staff of people. A guy named Jack Gale had been in Boston, the morning guy.
Right.
Long John Silver, who was a night guy, they brought in a team of people, of radio DJs that were all in major markets. So this place exploded. I wasn't here in the beginning. I came to Charlotte in 72, and I'd been. It's kind of a finagled story about what happened. Where was I? I'd been in Memphis and Cherryville and it came to Charlotte in 1969, the first time, to WIST radio, which was another top 40 station, not number one, but close to being number one. And I worked there and then went to Memphis and came back to WRPL in Charlotte, which was a lower power station. I came back as program director and the afternoon DJ. Within a year, I was at Big Ways in WROQ.
Which is a big step up, I would think. But you were there... at the time that Robert Murphy was there.
And Jay Thomas.
Yeah. The Jay Thomas that we know from television
now.
Because there's another Jay Thomas. But anyway, never mind. you were there with Murphy in the Morning. And Murphy in the Morning was a groundbreaking, this is before John Boy and Billy, this is before Bob and Sherry, this is before all the Ace and TJ and all those people who reigned over morning radio for a long time. Murphy in the Morning was a phenomenon, and I would think that you are a big part of that because you were like the sidekick, right?
Yeah, I was, if you in the terms that you have used for many years in the entertainment business, the second banana.
Yes.
You know, the guy that's there to provide extra humor, provide laughs when necessary, and to do, and what I did, we did a lot of characters that were people knew, like, I'm Ron Reagan in here on our station, and Mike Collins is with us. You know, I would be the president, or I'd be a celebrity, or we would have those people who were made up who live in the community. And I did those voices.
And here's, you mentioned that you were in Memphis for a while on the radio. So maybe this is where you learned how to do.
Man, I never did. I never did this. Maybe.
I know, but maybe this is where you learned how to do.
Thank you,
Elvis.
Good morning, Mr. Murphy. Mr. Murphy.
Yeah.
Where are you, Mr. Murphy?
Down here, Elvis.
Oh my goodness gracious! What are you doing on the floor over there? Well, you look like you've been run over by a train. What happened to you, Mr. Murphy?
Forget it, Elvis. Just help me up in my chair here.
Okay.
Good morning.
So the idea of morning radio hosts being buffoons and having a good time kind of spread throughout the 70s and into the 80s, these morning zoos. And you were a part of helping to create that whole genre of radio. Yeah,
because up until that point, it was just one guy,
yeah,
morning DJ. But we did create this atmosphere where it was a team. I did all the characters. We had a guy that did traffic. We had a newscast. We had a whole team of people in there, which eventually was called the Morning Zoo.
Mm-hmm.
A guy named Scott Shannon is a good friend of mine, created it down in Tampa with Cleveland Wheeler. And so that's when they started the zoo concept. Then he took it to Z100 in New York City.
Right.
But yeah, Murphy and I had that team camaraderie. We used the audience telephone, the two-way with the phones, people calling in, interactive. And it was a zoo on the air.
Yeah.
I mean, it was wide open. And it was very, very well planned out. Now, I worked with Jay Thomas before that. Jay was off the cuff. Everything was spur of the moment. We very seldom planned anything. It just happened. And he would be on the air and go, Jay Thomas, I'm Big Ways, and we got Steve Banagas here. Steve, how are you?
Yeah, Jay, it's good to be here today. I brought some donuts with me.
Well, what kind of, you know, and so I would have to come up with whatever, create a character on the spot with Jay. And so that was off the cuff. Murphy, well planned, well thought up. We, the day before the next morning, we would basically create a skeleton outline of what we're doing, and even a skeleton script of the bits that we would do. And we did a lot of bits on
there.
Yeah.
I want to talk about that. You and Murphy created characters like, and these people are still around. I mean, people still talk about Parker Myers and his wife, Peaches. They were the stereotypical Maz Park.
It's super. Just a great thing to be here. The Mike Collins here on WFAE, my favorite stage. Just super. Super.
And their children, Tyson and Ashley.
Now, I will explain about Parker and Peaches,
okay,
created by Murphy. And I have to say, Ted Pritchard was really the voice of Parker Myers.
Okay.
I was one of the kids.
No.
I talk like this. Super Daddy, just a super thing here, Myers Park.
Well, then let's let you graduate to something adult here, because
okay,
you also are famous. That Murphy in the morning thing was famous for lampooning something that put Charlotte, North Carolina on the map, and that is the PTL Club with Jim and Tammy Baker during the 80s. They broadcast from Fort Mill. They did, for those who don't remember, they had a network quality broadcast, evangelical Christian broadcast, but PTL for them stood for Praise the Lord. You and Murphy did a very popular send-up of the PTL Club, which you refer to as the Pass the Loot Club. And let's hear just a little piece of one episode of that series.
And now here's the popular host of the Pass the Loot Club, ladies and gentlemen, Brother Bill.
Good morning, everybody, and welcome to yet another meeting of the Pass the Loot Club. This is Brother Bill, so happy to be back here on the Murphy in the Morning Show once again, and so happy for the opportunity to reach into your pockets once again. Oh, pass the loot.
Pass the loot.
This was. I would think this is groundbreaking for Charlotte. I mean, Imus in the Morning in New York had the Reverend Billy Saul Hodges.
Yes, yes.
But this is Charlotte, conservative Charlotte, and these people are in the backyard.
They definitely are, and they were a major organization with a team of attorneys, 100 strong, and we receive lots of comments from the main office about cease and desist, but not from an attorney. Just please. Well, what happened was we started getting information from inside that, yeah, what you are referring to is really happening here. They are taking our money.
Yeah.
They are. Well, people are passing the loot, and they are collecting it among themselves. So, yeah, Brother Bill Taker was telling the truth.
Now, you mentioned that you got some pushback.
We
from
did.
Them.
Yeah, we
but
did.
You did a lot of things in that morning zoos do a lot of things that tick off some people.
Yeah, walking the line.
And people don't know, people don't associate why they call it commercial broadcasting. They call it commercial broadcasting because it's paid for by commercials. And when you go after the advertisers, they don't like it very much. So did you ever get any pushback from management saying you're ticking off our Ford dealership or our
never
fast food
Stan Kaplan, who Stan assists on the station, Stan said,
as long as you're making me a lot of money and we can finagle around these people, go ahead, keep doing it.
So we did. We never got any pushback from, never,
really? Wow.
from our owners, from our management, from the sales. We pretty much, I mean, I think we picked on some local folks and really upset a few. But as far as our sponsors, I think we kept most of them. And they made a lot of money.
Yes, they did.
That station made a ton of money back in those days, yes.
I want to hear a little bit more from the Pass the Loot Club here.
You know, today is a very exciting day in Pass the Loot Club history.
That's right.
And I'll tell you why.
Tell me why.
Some of you may have noticed a large balloon-like object floating over the skies of Charlotte yesterday. Well, friends, it's not a bird. It's not a plane. It's not a weather balloon. No, it's the all-new Pass the Loot Club Mobile Donation Center. Yes, now you can make a donation right in your own community as the Pass the Loot Club's Mobile Donation Center sets down near your home.
61 Dick Ways.
Now, I know you said these are all planned out because he liked to be in control, Murphy. But from his reaction, it sounded like maybe you were surprising him on some of these things.
I think the character that was that I created was one of those he had sometimes had to really focus to deal with the extent of that character. So yeah, that was uncontrollable at times. So what I created with that character, he was the brainchild of the massive amount of information. But then I took that and reinterpreted. I will say that particular bit was based on what really was a huge over Charlotte, huge weather balloon that was floating over Charlotte, and everybody saw it. It's kind of like the Chinese balloon a few years ago here. So that we just expanded on that for make it the mobile donation center on that day.
That bit ended, we didn't hear the end of it, but that bit ended with you giving out a place to send your donations, which just happened to coincide with the radio station's address. So I'm just curious, did anybody send you any money?
I'll be quite honest with you. We never got 1 cent. Never got 1 cent of money. Hoping that would be the case. No, we never did. Never made anything. Never made any commercial expenditures off that. Only the salaries.
How many bits do you think you did on an average day on that show? Because that show was 6 to 10, 4 hours long every day?
Yeah, 6 to 10. Yeah. We did, I mean, every break that he did, which means every time he was on the air, there was a potential for some character to be involved. But planned bits, well-written, produced, we did at least 2 to 3 a day. And then we would rerun those that ran the day before in different hours.
Yeah.
So it was jam-packed with bits.
Yeah.
And then the ad lib humor that he would bring in a character, that was going on nonstop.
And this has always fascinated me about radio, because they put these people on the air, particularly in mornings, but also they were afternoon. It graduated to afternoon teams later on, and these people are on the air for 4 hours a day.
Yeah,
I mean, the Tonight Show is an hour. Saturday Night Live is 90 minutes. This is 4 hours a day. 5 to 6 days a week. That's 20 to 24 hours of programming. And in television, you may be the front guy for The Tonight Show or whatever, but you have a phalanx of writers, 100 writers behind the scenes, and producers and videotape editors. It's just you and Murphy. Yeah,
that's what, two people and a good surrounding staff. But basically,
right.
Two people creating what you're on the air.
Everything.
Yeah.
I mean, so... Looking back, I mean, I was involved in this to a different degree than you, and it was exhausting, but I loved it. Was it exhausting? I mean, because you're getting up early in the morning, too.
Not really. I was never, of course, I was much younger, because, you know, you think that I left radio in 85. I was much younger. No, I never, in those days, we were on the air. It was just part of your job. You're on the air 6 days a week.
Yeah.
That was in the contract.
Yeah.
We didn't do the Murphy Show 6 days a week, but I had another show on the weekend where I played beach music, and use the name Sandy Beach. That's a whole nother story.
Yeah. Well, you're in the Beach Music Hall of Fame.
Yeah, that's right.
Is that why?
Maybe so, yeah. Maybe no. And that was a three-hour show on Sunday nights. And then I was never really exhausted. I was just, it was a, every single day was like a party. And I've told people, when I worked at that station, for 95% of the time I was there, it was the greatest thrill every single day to walk in that studio in that building and be on the air. And whether it was with Jay Thomas or Murph, and then I did the show by myself about 2 years, and then moved into TV. No, I loved it every single minute of it. You know, it's just like television. My passion for WCNC has been there 40 years, and I have as much enthusiasm now as I've ever had for it. I just have loved it so much.
Everything changes
over
time. But there was that period when you were in radio and when morning shows were fun to listen to, and people would they would stay in their cars.
Yeah.
They would stick with the station because they knew that Murphy in the Morning or Bob and Sherry or whoever were going to do something that they really liked, and they would make them laugh, and they would feel good about themselves. What happened? Where did that all go? Why is that gone?
It's just, you know, it's all the social media. It's all the different platforms in those days. And there are a lot of people, you know, that still are doing radio and trying their best. But it's not what it was. The heyday is over, and those great legendary people, and there's so many around the country that had the amazing morning shows especially, they've all retired or still barely hanging on there. It's just the medium has changed. It's all music now. Or, you know, the most successful radio is talk radio and sports radio.
Yeah, well, you don't need what we used to do.
Yeah.
You don't need anymore, because you don't need anybody to tell you what you're listening to, because you got Spotify.
Yeah.
And you don't need to know what the weather is, because it's on your phone. It's true. You just don't need it.
It's always, you're, like you said, it's right there. There's your phone, and there's music, there's your news and everything. Those days are historical, and just like you, Mike, you know, you were part of all that. To have been there during that time was a dream that I had as a little kid, and it came true.
Yeah. When we come back, I want to talk about this migration that you made into television.
Okay.
Which is where you are today, and remain, and will be there 100 years from now.
We'll still be talking about this on this show 100 years from now. You're right.
Larry Sprinkle's our guest. We're coming right back at Charlotte Talks on WFAE.
Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, incorporating Mazda's customer-centric vehicle design by making the customer the center of business to create a better car buying experience. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com.
It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE and WFAE.org. I'm Mike Collins. Larry Sprinkle is here. He is the weatherman, the longtime weatherman at WCNC-TV, who has been in the market for 50 years. We've been talking about radio because he was in radio before he was in television. Got a note from a listener, a woman, who says, this is all about the guys. And she brings up an interesting point. She said, we feel left out. I'm a woman, and we're not. You're talking about the guys on radio. That's the case.
For many years, exactly the way it was.
But women listened, but it was a man's world, as she says in this email. And I remember when I was at that other station, I used to have a movie reviewer who came in once a week, Catherine Chapin. And she was fabulous.
She was. I remember Catherine. Yes, she was excellent.
She was first at The Observer, and then she came to WBTV News, and she was in the newsroom, and I brought her in as a movie critic once a week, and we hit it off, and I went to management, and I said, I'd really like to have her on the program every day as a co-host. And, we can't do that. Why not? Money? No, we can't do that. Why not? Because women don't want to hear women now this is a man talking, okay?
What a scene,
that's right. That's right.
Yeah.
Women don't want to hear women in the morning. They want to hear a guy. And I thought, you're out of your mind. But they wouldn't do it. And then along come Bob and Sherry, and that the rest is history.
I'll say this about what happened at WAYS, WROQ, Assistant Stan Kaplan. They started bringing ladies in to the business. One of the first female rock jocks, if you want to call it, her name was Jacqueline Forsting, came in the early 70s there. And then we had one of our news anchors in the morning show was a female. So they were innovative in that respect. Yeah. And that was that migration of letting, hey, come on. People love to hear ladies on the air as well.
Yeah.
And the success that they've had in the broadcasting field for so many different years.
They've eclipsed men.
Without a doubt. Without a doubt. You watch television.
Oh, yeah.
It's females. Sure. And it meant so much to the industry, and so innovative, so creative. And I think it was a monumental moment when someone said, we need to have the ladies involved here, too.
So when we talk about the guys back then, they were really guys, because that's all that there was. And so that's you're listening to two people who have been here since the Pleistocene, huh?
It's even before. Yes.
All right. So before TV weather, you were on television with a character that really – It took off beyond the TV screen, and I'm talking about Sonic Man.
It's time for the Fabulous Funnies. I'm Sonic Man. Today, you and I will be watching our favorite characters in the fabulous world of funnies. There's Popeye, Spider-Man, the superheroes, and lots, lots more, plus our favorite game, Gotcha!
You were all masked up on WCCB TV. Who was Sonic Man? Because he had legs beyond that television.
Sonic Man was Lindsay Logue was the creator of the character, the producer, and really, I mean, the heart and soul of what Sonic Man was. Sonic Man was a character created to host the block of afternoon shows for kids on Channel 18 back in the 70s. So this was 1977.
Wow.
And they wanted someone who was like a Superman type character.
Yeah.
And so she created Sonic Man. We had worked together in radio, speaking of females. She had been in management at WAYS and WROQ, female. And she said, Larry, I have this idea about a character who's like a Superman or a Batman, you know, that hosts a show that's funny but also serious and can talk to kids one-to-one and be educational, informative, and be a positive influence. And that's what Sonic Man was. And Sonic Man, we had our own language, Sonic language. There was an alphabet, I mean, a dictionary created that we gave out, and Sonic Man would go, O Bonpoxies, let us all megulate and man the refectax. I'm Sonic Man. That means kids, sit back, let us all enjoy television and watch Sonic Man.
Huh. And you were given the keys to the city for that.
Without a doubt.
You were also on national television for a while for Tidy Bowl.
I'm getting flushed just thinking about this.
There you were. Yeah. Dressed in a captain's hat and a blazer and a turtleneck, floating around
in the tank,
in the boat, in a toilet bowl, as the Tidy Bowl Man.
I'm fed up with scrubbing.
Excuse me, but you need Tidy Bowl. Here.
Oh, it's you, the Tidy Bowl Man. Will this help?
Sure. With each flush, Tidy Bowl releases strong cleaners that help keep toilet bowls stain-free.
How do I know Tidy Bowl's cleaning?
The sparkling color tells you that it's working hard. Tidy Bowl's powerful and safe on plumbing.
What year was that?
That was that was Tidy Bowl in 19. That was also, it was interesting, mm-hmm. It was 19. I was doing Sonic Man. And the Tidy Bowl Man started in 1977. There have been.
She sounds like she's out of a 1940s movie.
It does, doesn't it? I mean, when you hear that, it's like, wow, what kind of flashback is that? But it's 1977. And I did that from 77 until the campaign ended in the early 80s. And they went from the Tidy Bowl Man to a kind of a, it was like a cartoon character that did it.
And yet you continue working to this day.
To this moment.
I don't know why you need to work. Because they must have paid you a fortune.
In Tidy Bowl.
They paid you in Tidy Bowl?
In Tidy Bowl, yeah.
You still have a closet full of it.
And that's where my career's gone ever since.
And you also were in, four or five movies, something like that?
I mean, if you want to put the worst of the worst, there are probably about 10. Most were not released. They escaped.
Okay.
They were pretty bad.
You were in Trick or Treat in 1986.
Yeah, the more notable Trick or Treat with Ozzy Osbourne, who just did his last concert.
You were in Firestarter at Stephen King.
With Drew Barrymore, worked with her in that. She was 9 years old.
Dogs of Hell, Another Son of Sam. But they gave you lines, Larry. This is something that people don't know. There are a lot of actors in this area who work in television and film because a lot of it's shot in Atlanta or Wilmington or even in Charlotte.
Yeah.
But the local actors, if they get a word, they're lucky. They're usually the waiter who comes to the table and silently hands you your dinner. You had lines. How did that happen? Lots of lines.
I worked. It was. I had a great agent, JTA, back in those days. They're still around. And they knew that when these movies were being cast, and quite often it was a what they call a cattle call audition, where everybody goes and you read. Now, I will say that some of the films were actually done in Shelby and done by EO Productions' Earl Owensby.
Yes.
Who was a gentleman who started a movie operation out of nothing, literally, and created this whole genre of you know, budget films that played back in those days at drive-ins and sent overseas and made a lot of money, but they were very inexpensively made and used a lot of local people. So it gave people breaks, gave me some. I had the opportunity to be in some of those.
Yeah.
And he'll even, you know, Earl would even say, you know, that was not the most classic film of all time.
He have a big tank? Something reminds me that he had a big
Yes, he did. It was
It
was going to be a nuclear station, and they didn't finish it, so he had a huge tank. I'm talking about millions of gallons that he rented out, leased out to film directors and film companies from Hollywood who came over to use that. Yeah.
So somehow, some way, you made your way to WRET-TV, which is now WCNC, and that was back when Ted Turner owned it. Did you meet Ted?
Yeah, Ted, in those days, I was doing a lot of freelance, and I was over there quite often. A very quiet man, had his chaw tobacco, and would walk around the building and go, almost like, yeah, I like the way you talk. Very quiet, soft-spoken. Always had a pen and pad with him, taking notes, and I never had a conversation. It was always, okay, good job, and he's out the door. But he was so successful. He sold that station and financed what became CNN.
When
he sold WRET.
When did you start doing morning weather?
I started doing morning weather 27 years ago.
Yikes.
Yeah, I was doing evenings and weekends, but for 27 years, 1988 until recently, I was on the morning show.
People don't think about this. Morning radio people, who like Marshall Terry on our station, gets up at some ridiculous hour to come in and be on the radio at 5:30 in the morning. And I did it for years at several different stations, and thought to myself, when I stopped doing it, I thought to myself, I will never do that again, ever again in my life. Unless it's on network television and they're paying me $2 million a year. Because I was getting up at 3:30 in the morning and going to bed at 11, because I can't go to bed before 11. I just can't. And I was also the program director, so we'd have meetings in the afternoons, like at 4 o'clock. I'd been there for 12 hours.
I didn't realize you were the PD and morning guy. Wow.
Yeah. So anyway,
what a combination.
What time did you get up?
I got up, average getting up around 1:15.
And what does that do to your life, to your body?
I mean, it because I did that so long, it just became who you are. And I'm like you. I can't go to bed early. I think I tried going to bed early one time. I woke up at midnight, and I said, why do I want to be up? I don't want to be up at midnight. So I would go to bed about 9:15, 9:30. That's not a lot of sleep.
No, it's not.
So you're functioning on no sleep. You're functioning on adrenaline and perseverance and, you know, the voice behind you. Do it right. There's people behind you that want this job.
Yes.
You know, there was always this voice behind me. No, I loved what I was doing. And for 27 years, it was just who I was. And I finally said, you know what, you can't keep doing this.
Yeah.
You can stay on TV, but you can't keep getting up at 1:15 in the morning.
The reason I refer to you many times as the hardest working man I've ever met in broadcasting is because not only are you getting up at 1:30 in the morning to be on television, that's ridiculous hours, to do the weather, you have been involved And I don't think you can count the number of benefit things that you have done that have benefited the community, that have benefited various charities, giving your time freely to MC, to be an auctioneer, to just appear, to make speeches, to talk to kids, to be involved in charity fund drives and clothing events. This was all free and gratis. You don't have to do this.
No, and that's true, and I don't charge. You know, there are people, and I didn't know this until it wasn't that long ago. I found out that there are people who charge to do benefits for nonprofits. I'm thinking, why would I? This is a nonprofit. This event is to raise money for these kids, for these people, for this situation. Why would I take money for them? So I don't take, and never will. And I don't have to do it, but I remember the first general manager in radio I worked for when I was 14. He said, "Larry, let me tell you something." He said, "If you want to be successful, you have to be out in the community." And that was it.
It comes with the territory.
Yeah.
I don't think people today understand that or the value of that. And you did, obviously. And people have commented about not only did you show up because you were the WCNC TV guy, and the cameras were there to cover your participation in the event, the cameras would leave because they got what they needed for the newscast, and you would stay for hours afterward.
It's just a passion. It's just a when you put yourself out there, the way I've always felt is that you're given of yourself, and people respond. And when you're with people and they know that you're real, then you're accepted. And I guess it's like wanting to be accepted. You know, they really like me. It may be a psychological thing where you've always wanted people to like you. A lot of people in this business are very shy. And from me, there's no doubt. I really started out as a very shy kid. And being involved, making yourself go out there, that helps overcome that situation.
Is this because you were working you were burning the candle at all ends and in the middle as well? did that lead to that horrific accident you had a couple of years ago where you were on 485, you had a blackout moment, and the next thing you knew they were cutting you out of the car?
Yeah, that was 2016. That was 9 years ago, mm-hmm. May. And it was, and I'll be honest, it was, I'd worked on the air. I had to make a trip to take care of some family matters out of town. And I was driving back. And so it was probably exhaustion.
Took a little nap.
It was like I'm driving and I'm seeing the traffic, and then the traffic stopped, and then it was just like, here comes the front end of the car on top of me, the dash is on top of me, glass is shattering.
You had you broke what, your knee, your several
legs,
ribs, you
legs,
broke both of your legs,
legs
you
and ribs and arm and multiple lacerations.
Learn how to walk again.
Yeah, that what, was yeah.
What impact has that had on your life or your viewpoint or your outlook on life?
It's so corny. I mean, it's been said a million times, but it just makes you appreciate every moment you have to live. And when I sat there in the hospital, I was in Charlotte Rehabilitation Hospital for months, sitting there in a wheelchair, immobile, because my legs had to be immobile.
Mm-hmm.
They were both shattered, knees, ankles, limbs, bones broken. Mm-hmm. And it just made me appreciate life. And it was humbling. It was the most humbling thing that ever happened, because I was just a person like every other single person in that hospital. I was there in need. And a dedicated group of people in the medical, from the doctors to the nurses, nurses' assistants, to all those people who were counseling me, brought me back and put me on my feet again.
What everybody says about you is that you're among the best people they've ever worked with. And what you do is you're a professional through and through, but you do it without ego. And so many people in this business have enormous egos that are way outsized for what they do, for the contributions they make. How have you been able to not be the egotist that everybody might think you are.
I think I'm just always humbled by what you just said, and it's to the heart. I basically am just a shy guy, and that's what it is, a shy guy who's in the business.
Larry Sprinkle, who has been gracing the airwaves of Charlotte for 50 years and making contributions both on and off the air. Your colleagues want to know, you're not doing the morning weather. Why do you still get up at 6:30 in the morning and come in? But that's another show. Thank you for the hour.
Thank you, Mike Collins.
Charlotte Talks is a production of 90.7 WFAE. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from Mazda of South Charlotte. Our executive producer is Gabe Altieri. The senior producer is Sarah D'Elia. Our producer is Chris Jones. For more information about Charlotte Talks, to listen to past episodes, or to subscribe to the Charlotte Talks podcast, visit wfae.org/charlottetalks. Additional support for WFAE programming comes from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, a private corporation funded by the American people.
Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, focused on applying Mazda's customer-centric approach for vehicle design to car buying and servicing in order to create an experience centered around the customer. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com.